Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, November 13th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy hump day, Melody.
Oh, I almost forgot that's what day it is today. Gee whiz.
That's true. I'll never
Surprise.
Let you forget. Never let you forget.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to say anything more to that. We have Wendy Wilson joining us today right after the market report. Hopefully, my computer is going to bring it up here fairly quick. We've been busy all the way into the program today. And, you know, gold had a nice day, up $8 at $1,464. Silver was, over 17, up 18 cents at 17.02. Platinum was up $5 at 877. Palladium was up 5 at 1711. The USDX today was also up a penny at 98.34, with crude oil up 47 at 57.27. Early morning markets, the Dow was showing a 100-point loss. It recouped, and now we're looking at 98 points to the upside. Only in magic land can they do that. 27,789. The NASDAQ was down 4 points at 8,482. The S&P was up 2 at 3,093.99. 10-year yield dropped 0.04 at 1.87%. That's the 10-year yield. Hong Kong was down another almost 2% today, down almost 500 points. Again, they have a little more issues with their demonstrators over there, and we'll talk about that a little bit here in the program. But first, I'd like to welcome Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs to the program. She joins us each and every Wednesday. We do so enjoy having her here. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Millie. Thank you so much. And hey, Dave.
Hi there.
I thought we'd talk about the unanswered question. Well, I know the answer. Maybe you do, too. Why are medications not tested for cancer? Do you know why?
Because they cause it.
Oh, winner, winner, chicken dinner for Melody there. Yeah, we're going to talk about why and how and all that good stuff, because, you know, there are lots of ways.
Is that the correct answer?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. All
yes, right. And the same goes. The same goes for vaccines. You know, that's the reason they don't test them for that. But there are lots of ways that medical treatments can increase our risk to getting cancer. So, first thing that comes to mind, you know, is radiation treatments. But, you know, doctors explain it's a low dose. It's not going to give you cancer. But you got to consider all these low doses of radiation we now get in our technology-filled world. You know, we get X-rays. We get Wi-Fi. We got 4G. Now to get 5G, you know, we got smart meters, and, you know, so, you know, we're bombarded with a lot of these electromagnetic waves all the time. So the risk of us getting cancer in our modern world is far higher compared to those in the 1900s. So we don't have to be radiated to get cancer. Many patients are getting doses of carcinogen-causing chemicals in their prescription meds, and we're going to talk about this right now. And there's lots of reasons why drug treatments can give you cancer. You know, it could the medications could be contaminated, or as the FDA calls it, adulterated. There could be toxic chemicals in there. There could be a combination of toxic substances that cross react. There could be it could be a faulty treatment theory that, you know, started with the clinical trials, and it could be an accumulative effect of toxins that we get with repeated treatments. And also, it could be just a flat-out cover-up at the drug cartel level. So let's talk about some new research on this, because in 2019, Webmaster.com reported on a popular blood pressure medication. It's called Acaterin, and it contained cancer-causing chemicals in it. So the FDA recalled the lots of the drug thought to be adulterated that was manufactured in China. So, you know, we've talked about this previously, that a lot of times when your drugs go to generic status, the drugs aren't made usually by the big pharmas here. They are made by smaller drug companies overseas. And these companies, you know, they're not under the FDA oversight. So, you know, who knows? So the reports state that the blood pressure drug contained high levels of, this long word, it's dimethylfuramide, or DMF for short. It's a solvent. Sometimes it's used as an additive. But if you inhale, absorb, or ingest too much of it, it is a significant liver toxin. Now, of course, the chemical solvent industry lists this dimethylfuramide as not known by conclusive research and studies to be a carcinogen. So nobody's really going on record to say it is. See? So the FDA reported that the amount of the dimethylfuramide, or the DMF, in the blood pressure medications from China had 80,000 nanograms per pill of this solvent, and supposedly it's still safe because it was 100 nanograms under the unsafe level. Now, doesn't that make you feel better?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, and the health authorities suggest, you know, patients should continue to take the drug. Now, keep in mind, this recall is on the heels of a 2018 recall involving more blood pressure drugs containing cancer-causing compounds. So Healthline reported on that that recall involved Losartan potassium tablets, and also Valsartan was also included in that drug sweep, as well as the drug called Ibesterin. So these are anti-tension 2 receptor blockers. They call them ARBs, and they're often prescribed for people with high blood pressure and congestive heart failure. So this makes you wonder, you know, if a friend or a family member just happened to have heart condition, is on drugs, and then died suddenly of cancer, it kind of makes you wonder if it was the prescription drug that promoted that. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's the scary part. Okay, you ready? You got your garlic and your and your steak and your cross, and you ready?
I always have my garlic.
Okay. These drugs are made by 26 different drug companies overseas. And many of them had recalls. 2018 sweep of drugs contained toxic levels of nitro, sosamethylene. It's a semi-volatile organic chemical product. It's produced by several industrial processes, and it's used in low levels in foodstuffs like cooked or smoked or cured foods. So maybe you might not want to eat that kind of food, you know what I mean? Also, it was in the drugs nitrosidomethylene, and this is a carcinogen, and it's a mutagenic compound classified as a nitrosamine, often found in tobacco smoke. It's a group 2A carcinogen, according to the World Health Organization, and that's in your heart drugs. And then also was in these drugs was the nitro-methyl-4-aminobutyric chemical, various types of carcinogens is what it is. They find it typically in tobacco leaves, but it's a carcinogen to humans. Okay? So according to the health authorities, the EPA that investigated how these compounds got into the prescription drugs, they concluded it was both industrial and natural processes, but this often occurs when good manufacturing guidelines aren't followed, okay? So you're not getting the quality drug that you think you are if it's coming into the country from, like, China or other places. So they conclude that it could happen to anyone making a pharmaceutical drug. It's amazing, isn't it, that chemicals used in the production of liquid rocket fuel, antioxidants, synthetics, and lubricants can make its way into your body under the oversight of scientific medicine. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is. And you would think that as much as we pay for you know, the pharmaceuticals, that at least they'd be quality. You know?
Well, it's a generic, you know, and so once the patent expires off the thing, then the drug companies aren't making their money, mm-hmm. See? So they release it to whoever will want to make it.
And didn't I share the story with you? One of my neighbors, she went from not a generic, but she went to a generic, And she got deathly ill. Her blood pressure shot up. I mean, it was just incredible. And she thought she'd be able to save a few bucks. She pays, and it just made her deathly ill. I mean, she's lucky she didn't have a more severe issue. So, yeah, going to a generic made her sick.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a quote from Dr. Victoria Shin. She's a cardiologist with Torrance Medical, a Memorial Medical Center in California. She says, it's a contaminant that was included in the manufacturing process. That's the problem. But patients should not lose faith in the drugs themselves. Well, how are they going to know what's quality and what's not anymore, you know? Recalls were also rolled out for heartburn meds, ulcer medication, acid reflux drugs for, you know, GERD. Zantac was on the list. And these all had the compound semi-volatile organic toxic compound nitrocyamethylene. So that's all in those drugs as well. But the FDA updated the label warnings on such drugs to include this. The actual risk of cancer to patients is likely much lower than our estimates. And I'm like, wait, they have estimates? Hello? Where did these estimates come from? Since the FDA does really no actual drug testing or any testing of any chemical whatsoever, what estimates are they talking about? Well, could it be that the FDA does have some study data on these types of compounds and the range of the cancer-causing risk they offer? So the FDA does not say, however, if they were knowledgeable about the levels of cancer risk coming from these types of compounds often found in foods and drugs, then manufacturers would need to stay below that lethal limit. However, the heart drugs are not, you know, taken once, but they're lifelong. And there's an accumulative effect of these toxins. Could be mind-blowing, you know. Some doctors agree. Here's a quote from Dr. Craig Beavers. He's a cardiovascular clinical pharmacist at the University of Kentucky Medical Center. And he puts it this way, even if it's a very relatively small risk, that's still a risk we don't want because these impurities introduce a possible cancer-causing substance into the user's body. The affected drugs have higher than acceptable levels of these compounds, and they have long been known to cause cancer in laboratory animals, and we assume the same is true for all living beings. These compounds particularly affect the liver, kidneys, lungs, according to the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, end of quote. So they know they're toxic, you know, yet they're prescribing it. I mean, I don't know if any patient out there would, you know, think twice maybe about taking it if they knew all the facts.
Well, you'd think, but...
Well, according to the FDA, here's what they say. The problem seems to be when these chemical compound solvents are used in a manufacturing of active pharmaceutical ingredients. So the FDA's cancer estimate is that people are taking the adulterated heart drugs for maybe 4 years. That they say they estimate it's going to produce at least one cancer case in 8,000 people. That's their estimate. So if you're on the drug 4 years, you may get cancer. So you want to keep in mind that their estimates and, you know, what it's based on is kind of an estimate, a guess, you know, an educated guess. So one death may be acceptable to medical science, but I think it's a travesty. Seriously. There's other ways to work with weak malfunctioning cardio systems than taking this kind of stuff. My opinion. That's my opinion. So, you know, I just like to strengthen the heart system instead of, you know, just mask symptoms. I'm not a symptom masker, you know.
Yeah, and that's what so many of them do. And but you know what? It's the pharmaceutical companies. It's a large part the doctors, and now it's even the pharmacies, like your Rite Aids and your, you know, the Walgreens, even though they're closing a lot of those stores, but the CVS and so forth, they're all in on it too. Somebody was telling me the other day, they started a new, you know, some pill for something. The next thing you know, the doctor is handing them a letter from where he got the prescription saying that because he's now on that pill, he needs to take this other one too.
Mm-hmm.
This is the pharmacy.
Oh boy. And not the doctor. just
not the doctor.
Oh boy, yeah.
So it's they're all in and on.
Well, there's a drugstore in every corner.
There is.
Notice that we got a real problem. We're a drug culture nation, and we got a real problem, you know, with that. You know, because taking any prescription medication is a big risk. There's risk to it. There is no zero risk to prescription meds. Doctors admit that. So you're betting on all those involved in the research, the manufacture, and the dosing are legitimate, scientifically based, verified therapeutic promoting treatments. You're assuming and you're hoping that's the case. So the problem happens when the research is wrong, but the making of the drug tends to proceed anyway. The added risk is when the drug is adulterated and then, or the dose is wrong. So taking pharmaceutical drugs is really kind of like the roulette wheel, you know?
Yeah.
And, so, I mean, we were talking about,
I just want to do this real quick, Wendy. And you know what? It's really sad because you would think that they have the abilities to create something. And to let people know to where they can be helped.
I know. Well, I've reported this before. Scientists went and looked at all these clinical trial studies. I think they went back 25, 30 years, and they found out they were using the wrong cell lines, let's say, for testing on a new cancer drug, whether it's breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer. So if you have the wrong cell line, I think a couple of the researchers said they were testing prostate cells for breast cancer research or vice versa. So you have the wrong cell. And what happens in the lab, he says, is sometimes the label on the container where the cells are is wrong. So it's really required by top-notch scientists to test those cells before they proceed with the study, but they're not doing that. So he says we've got decades of cancer research that's wrong. And there's drugs that were built upon that.
Wow. But what are they doing about it?
No, he says 42 to 74% of the studies are just totally trash. Trash.
Did they do new studies?
He didn't say, but he just said this is a problem. I would believe it.
Yeah, I would say so.
We'll talk about that, I'm sure, in the future. We'll see what they do. But in the meantime, strengthen your cardio. There's herbs and spices and foods that do that. You got a lot of power with that. God says you have a promise from Him. You can do that. And so I'm going to go with God.
Absolutely.
That's it. Well, they can give us a call for a free catalog at 866-229-3663. 866-229-3663, or visit us online at thepowerherbs.com.
Thank you, Wendy. We'll see you next Wednesday.
All right. Take care now. Bye-bye.
You betcha. Bye-bye. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, right after these short messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter, and you can listen to this program archived and, of course, live, just by going to the radio page. And of course, there's a bar at the top and click on it. We are live at 4 o'clock Eastern time. And as always, I just want to thank everyone for the support of the program, those who produce it, my co-hosts, you listeners. You're all so very important. And we appreciate your comments. So you can always email me at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, or give us a call, and if we're not here, leave a message. A lot of you do, and we appreciate it, so thank you. Let's go ahead, and yesterday we did talk, Dave, a little bit about President Trump's speech to his New York Economic Forum, but this is Powell's speech. He was in front of Congress, the Joint Economic Committee, this morning, and he said that the Federal Reserve is unlikely to adjust interest rates anytime soon, just as long as the economy remains on its present path. He did reiterate that a stance he outlined a couple of weeks ago, that the Fed's move this year toward a more accommodative policy, monetary policy, have helped support the economy. And he also noted that the Fed moves tend to have a lagged effect, meaning that it'll take time to assess what impact they are having. I know what he said then, and I'm sure he's smarter than I am, Dave, but I mean, you get these knee-jerk reactions as far as, I said it. I'm sorry. I mean, you would think that it wouldn't have... that it wouldn't have a lagged effect. But that's just because we have the knee-jerk reactions, and maybe there is a knee-jerk reaction in addition to the lagged effect. But
I think he may have been talking about the economy. I mean, obviously there are immediate impacts to the investor markets, the stock market, the bond market, the precious metal market. But as a lagging economic indicator, I think he's suggesting, at least I hope he is, or I believe he's way off, that economic effects of Fed decisions are going to be somewhat delayed. But that's because his comments weren't quite specific enough. Yeah, it's somewhat speculation on my part, but I would think that's where he was going there.
And then he continued just to blah, blah, blah about the same 2% and 2% inflation and all that other kind of stuff, Dave.
Well,
same old
baloney. We do know that the Fed has cut its Fed funds rate 3 times this year to its current target range of 1.5 to 1.75%. While the Fed funds rate specifically sets the rates that banks charge each other for essentially overnight lending, it also is tied to multiple forms of consumer debt, as we talk about a lot on this program. Following the Federal Open Market Committee meeting late last month, Powell said he sees the economy as, quote, being in a good place, and unlikely to need more stimulus if the data stay consistent. He added yesterday, or this morning, looking ahead, my colleagues and I see a sustained expansion of economic activity, really? A strong labor market and inflation near our symmetric 2% objective as most likely. Now, that's interesting. I guess, you know, it again, all depends upon the interpretation of what he's saying. A sustained expansion of economic activity. Right after the last meeting, it seemed that most of the Fed branches around the country lowered their growth expectations for the third and fourth quarters. The fourth quarters and the first quarters of next year. So I guess anything greater than zero is a sustained expansion, Melody. You know, as he has said many times before, Powell cautioned that challenges remain, such as weakness abroad, trade tensions, and again, low inflation.
Was there anything else that, there I go again. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners, we're doing something here, so if you hear us say little strange comments, don't just ignore it. But was there anything else that was worth mentioning? Any other topics?
They seem to be focusing on this 2% inflation target. You know, Powell also, you know, said in addition to some other Fed presidents that inflation would have to rise substantially before he, at least, Powell, would consider another rate hike. A number of other members of the Open Market Committee have said the same thing, essentially.
Well, the one thing that's all near and dear to our hearts is a government shutdown. The House will vote next week on a measure to dodge a government shutdown for just another month. And, of course, this is said by House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer. And the short-term bill would keep the government running through December 20th. That's always a good day because they just do that quickly because it's so close to the holidays. No one even frets about it. Funding will lapse after November 21st if Congress doesn't act to prevent a shutdown. The continuing resolution would give the Democratic-held House and the GOP-controlled Senate more time to hash out longer-term funding bills. You know, they have a whole year to do this, Dave.
I know. You know? It's really remarkable at their lack of tongue-in-cheek with some of these comments.
Truly, truly. So, you know, we've seen that the Democrats and the Republicans have so far failed to come to a consensus on border security and military funding, Dave.
Well, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's office didn't immediately respond when asked if he would back the legislation once it got out of the House. The White House also declined to comment on whether the president would sign it into law. Just means that I guess they haven't coordinated their negotiating strategy as of yet. Now, neither Republican, that is Mitchell, or the president, has yet indicated opposition to a short-term plan to keep the government running. But this one-month kick the can down the road, Melody, is getting harder and harder to stomach. I mean, if you're going to take the trouble of having these negotiations because you haven't had your act together to, you know, pass the necessary appropriation bills after the fiscal year has started, don't extend it for just a month. Get it through the end of the fiscal year. I mean, it shows you how far apart they probably are on some of the specifics. Although, you know, Hoyer did say that he expects a relatively clean bill. That's a continuing resolution, suggesting it won't have provisions that could prove toxic, particularly when it goes on to the Senate. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Not during an election year anyway, so, you know, heading into next year, I mean, because And it, you know what? It always amazes me, Dave, is that all of a sudden they come to this meeting of minds. Oh, okay, let's pass it. So somebody got what they wanted. The person that's been holding out got what they wanted. But, and this is what stumped me when Jerome Powell said that there was a lagged response, is because you usually see a pretty quick response when it comes to mortgage applications when they're talking about the rates. I mean, that's pretty immediate. Maybe because the reports don't come out till later, but it usually is a pretty immediate response on like mortgage apps. And we saw that the mortgage rates, they are beginning to turn a little bit higher again. And that was likely behind a major surge in mortgage application volume last week. This often happens at the start of a rising rate cycle as borrowers realize rates may have hit bottom and they'll try to rush in to get in before they move even higher. We had the total mortgage application volume rise 9.6% last week compared to the week before. And this, of course, was out by the Mortgage Bankers Association. The average contract interest rate for the year, 30-year fixed rate mortgage, increased from 4.03 from 3.98.
Our buddy Joel Kahn of the Bankers said that positive data on consumer sentiment and growing optimism surrounding the U.S.-China trade dispute were behind last week's rise in the 30-year fixed rate. Homebuyers, you said, may also have been pushed off the fence, again, by this potential rising rate environment. Mortgage apps to purchase a home rose 5% for the week, or 15% higher than a year ago. As we've talked about, buyer demand is high right now, but being tempered somewhat by a short supply of homes for sale, especially at the entry level, Melody.
We talk a lot about the trade negotiations between the United States and China, and these are high stakes. These are high stakes trade negotiations. And of course, we all thought that was close to a phase one signature deal. But it seems like there's been another snag, Dave, over the Chinese purchases of American agriculture products and other core issues.
No, I'm shocked.
Surprised. China has agreed to buy up to $50 billion in U.S. farm goods as part of the so-called phase one trade deal that was announced last month. But today we're kind of learning that China is hesitant to commit to a specific amount of agricultural products in the text of a potential deal. Beijing is also showing resistance over the U.S. demands for more tech transfer restrictions and a strong enforcement mechanism for the deal. We did see stocks hit their sessions low today following the news. And the two countries, we all know they reached a truce last month, started working to finalize a limited trade agreement, which is expected to be signed later this month. But,
well, just as a quick reminder, China is insisting that the existing tariffs be rolled back as part of any phase one deal. However, the U.S. has shown opposition to such removal. White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow said yesterday there will be no tariff adjustments until a trade deal with China has been inked. He added that the two sides have made progress on IP theft, financial services, currency stability, commodities, and agriculture, Melody.
I would like to know what those are.
I guess we'll find out when the phase one agreement is released to the public.
Okay, well, web cameras on the border wall. Jared Kushner and other senior Trump administration officials are planning to set up web cameras to live stream construction of the border wall. There will be a wall cam, and it'll launch early next year. This is said from a senior White House official that was involved in the initiative. The cameras aim to rally public support for hundreds of miles of new border barrier that President Trump wants to place by next year's election. The project, which has already cost $10 billion, is behind schedule and faces major hurdles, including the need to acquire miles of privately held land in Texas, where barriers are slated to be built. And this comes from Kushner. And well, that's the generation of tech. Kushner floated the idea during meetings in July, part of messaging effort to push back against criticism about the wall that President Trump has failed to deliver on his signature proposal of his 2016 campaign. But is it a good idea, Dave?
I guess it depends on who you talk to, right? The Army Corps of Engineers and Customs and Border Protection Agency have told Kushner that construction contractors don't want their proprietary techniques visible to their competitors. Officials at the Army Corps and the CBP also were concerned that the cameras would show U.S. work crews violating Mexican sovereignty. That's never good. That particular issue is because the workers have to stray south of the border to maneuver their vehicles and heavy equipment in the desert, I guess, erecting pieces of the wall. Now, because some of the remote border areas lack network access, the cameras apparently will require their own web connectivity and attendants who could frequently reposition them to keep lenses pointed at the ever-evolving action. Kushner apparently is pressing forward with plans for a 24-hour wall cam idea, despite these concerns.
Well, my question is, if the Army Corps and Customs and Border Protections were concerned that the cameras would show work crews violating Mexican sovereignty, well, isn't the illegal immigrants, aren't they violating American sovereignty? Just a thought there, ladies and gentlemen. State Department rejects Israeli criticism of U.S. aid, and I guess there's quite a few bombs being tossed back and forth over there in Gaza. We're going to talk about that here probably in the next segment of the program. But a senior State Department official has rejected Israeli criticism regarding the U.S. assistance to the Lebanese armed forces, as well as the Israeli demand to condition the aid of the Lebanese government that's acting against Hezbollah's precision missile factory. So the U.S. gives the Lebanese army around $105 million a year and supports it with training and equipment. Doesn't that always get us in trouble? We need to stop doing this.
It often does.
Yes, we need to bring that money home. Israel is concerned that the Lebanese army is infiltrated by Hezbollah, and that any U.S. assistance to the Lebanese army is going to end up in the terror organization's hands. And we're in the hands of our break, ladies and gentlemen. We're heading in there. We'll be back right after a few short commercials. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Just a little, you know, you have the Dow reaching all these highs. Well, you know, Disney's in the Dow, correct?
I believe it is.
Well, that popped 7% today, so that's a good understanding of why the Dow went from 100 negative early trade to being a little bit to the positive when you have a Dow component, one, that pops more than 7%. And I guess it's amazing, because yesterday I was reading all the negative news on their new cable network, I believe it is, or their new...
Their streaming service, Disney Plus.
And it failed miserably. Didn't work. And yet today, hey, that's all right. You fail, we like it.
Millions of people signed up. Therefore, it must be good.
It must be good. It's Disney. I just don't know. What I do know is it's time for your favorite segment of the week, Dave, and that's the Brevity is Golden. Now, we did talk about, I think Butch and I might have talked about this, but I know you go a little bit more into details about 2/3 of Americans say they're not better off. And that was the big question when it was Reagan, correct?
That's right. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?
So, on that line, take it away.
Well, Melody, despite steady job growth and stocks rallying to record highs, only about 1/3 of Americans say they feel better off financially since the last presidential election, November of 2016. It's the result of a bipartisan online poll, two polling groups, one Democratic-leaning, the other Republican-leaning, that found that 31% of Americans, about 1/3, say they're worse off financially. Another 1/3, 33%, reported no change in their financial position. Among those who reported feeling worse off, the two most important reasons for the change in status were income and wages, about 36%, and, here we go, the burden of debt, about 20%. For Americans who reported feeling better off, the number one reason was income and wages again, almost 40%, followed by the amount of personal savings and investment, about 24%. Total consumer debt carried by Americans topped $4 trillion earlier this year, and outstanding student loan debt climbed to $1.4 trillion. Now, while debt has increased, wage growth has remained relatively flat. You know, through the target for nominal wage growth is 3.5, or I should say, though, the target for nominal wage growth is 3.5 to 4% annually. Year over year wage growth for private employees has fallen below that rate at 3%. And though there's been a push to raise the minimum wage in certain places to $15 or $16 per hire, the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour hasn't been changed since 2009. 29 states and the District of Columbia have set their minimum wage higher than that level. 26 have changed their minimum wage since the start of 2014. Well, whatever. The combination of stagnant wages and increased debt can amplify the feeling of being worse off. Debt in particular is a factor because of our distorted beliefs around it.
That's according to Brad Klontz, a psychologist and certified financial planner, who on occasion we refer to and quote. He said a lot of people think that because they have some debt, they're doing terrible. They can have literally $1 million in net worth, and they can't go to sleep at night because they're worried about this debt that they have. He said debt can cause what's known in psychological terms as learned helplessness, or the feeling that escape is impossible, no matter how much you chip away at what you owe. Ed Combs, who's a licensed marriage and family therapist, said there are certain social norms around debt similar to the ones around body image. For many people, he says, if we stray from those norms, it creates psychological distress. So our belief in our capacity to pay off debt can help the process be more manageable. And both of them say visualizing your success helps. Klontz found that people significantly increased their savings behavior when they had a clear and exciting vision about what they wanted, you know, when they got out of debt. Whether it's a family vacation to South America or the ability to buy a home, Klontz says that really getting in touch with your values and what you're most passionate about can help keep you on track, or for that matter, get you on track and out of debt. Having a clear vision about future goals really helps people successfully pay off their debt and pursue their passions. So think about visioning, ladies and gentlemen. That, Melody, is this week's Brevity is Golden.
And that's a very good one, because I think when people try to get out of debt, lots of times they just focus on getting out. They don't have a vision.
Now what?
But, you know, but having a vision help encourages you. It gives you something to work for, to get out of the debt, to save for. But when you're just strictly focused, you know, it's kind of like a diet. You know, if you're just strictly thinking about dieting, you're not going to lose weight. But if you visualize and you see the and you think of the outcomes and so forth, it gets you to that point a little bit quicker and easier. And but moving on, Bolivia. We're going to talk about Bolivia.
Hey, it's in our hemisphere.
Yes, it is.
It's in the Americas.
Well, let's talk about Bolivia then. They are going to, they have an interim president, Jeanine Anez Chavez. And with the backing of the military, she met with advisors today to appoint a new cabinet. And at the same time, backers of former President Evo Morales pledged to disrupt the new government and nullify her climb to power. After days of looting and violent demonstrations in the wake of Morales' last weekend, the streets of Bolivia's largest city, La Paz, appeared almost normal this morning after the clouds of tear gas from the night before had lifted, and businesses were beginning to reopen, and bus and hospital service returning to regular schedules. Police officers stationed around the legislative assembly sat on curbs eating popped corn, leaving the staffing of nearby barricades to their civilian supporters, Dave.
Well, this calm was uneasy the day after Anez declared herself interim president before a special session of their legislative assembly. The session was boycotted by supporters of Mr. Morales. They remain in the majority even after he resigned on Sunday and fled to Mexico seeking asylum. Now, by midday today, several thousand, mostly indigenous Morales supporters, marched through the streets of La Paz peacefully, waving colorful flags and setting off firecrackers. The political crisis and subsequent demonstrations were set off by the recent disputed presidential election, in which Morales initially declared victory. But his grip on power swiftly began to erode as the opposition said the vote had been rigged and protesters poured into the streets. I'd like to know, I'll have to follow up on this, to what extent Morales's government had been getting, both had been getting support and was giving support from and to Venezuela and good old Nick Maduro.
That's what I was thinking. I'm thinking, well, this sounds a lot like Venezuela. But right now, Morales is in Mexico, and he has repeatedly denounced Ms. Inez as an illegitimate president. But she intends to stay in power only until new elections can be held in 90 days. The formation of a new government appeared to have eased some of the tension around the capital, but we'll see what happens. We'll have to keep following. But it did leave 8 dead in recent weeks.
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot of this violence across all these nations around the world, demonstrators. It's interesting. I don't know if that's the proper word of saying to be using, but
it's certainly one of them.
This is Venice, is in a state of emergency. I think everybody knows that Venice was sinking. There have been talks of that for a long time. And the mayor of Venice, who said that the city was on its knees, has called for a state of emergency, closing all schools after the Italian city was submerged under Acqua Alta, an exceptionally high tide, the highest in 50 years. Dave, I remember it was just maybe a month ago where we experienced here on the eastern shore high tide that flooded. I mean, there wasn't a cloud in the sky, and usually you always relate massive flooding to storms and rain and so forth. But this was just high tide, that the water, there was a storm offshore and it just pushed everything in, and high tide, it was just flooded a lot of areas. And this reminds me of the same. You had outdoor restaurants in Venice and chairs just bobbing in the waters. Tourists were forced to clamber through the windows of high-end hotels as the water rose to about 6 feet before 11 p.m. last night. When dawn broke this morning, the authorities began to survey the damage. I've seen things in San Marco I thought I'd never see, the mayor of Venice said. It's a very difficult situation. And, of course, they're going to blame, you know what, climate change for the city troubles, and called for rapid completion of a long-delayed barrier system. Well, that's probably the main reason, for whatever reason that it's delayed. You have to think of another reason to blame other than their incompetence in government in order to get things done.
I have a good friend, in fact, a former colleague at CBO from a couple of decades back, who just got back from Venice about 3 weeks ago. She posted a number of pictures from her visit, one of which was, you know, she and her sneaker-clad self with, it looked like an inkling of water next to one of the canals. And now seeing some of the pictures today in Venice next to those same canals, and seeing people literally knee to waist high in water is it's a doggone shame. It's tragic if you think in terms of just the wonderful architecture.
Yes.
Is in Venice. You've been there.
I've been there.
Been a while, but you know better than many listeners what's at stake. You know, obviously, aside from loss of life, because we know last year severe weather in Italy killed 11 people. Ferocious winds drove the high tide in Venice to more than 5 feet above average sea level. And, Venice's public transportation boats, they call them Vaporetti. Italian media reported that at least three of them sank. One floated over the banks that line the city canals, ended up real close to buildings where pedestrians still walk.
Well, some of the famous tourist spots like St. Mark's Square, they were under several feet of water. The crypt of St. Mark's Basilica, it was flooded by more than 3 feet of water. The historic piazza, it was expected to be under 5 feet of water. And it is very, I can still remember the, I don't know what you want to call it, the feel, when you're there. I mean, it's, you're just transported like back in time, and it is, it's just beautiful, absolutely beautiful. The architecture, the paintings, the, so yes, it's sad to say, and it's built, the city itself is built on, I don't know what it's built on, I can't recall, it's like stilts or just dirt, rock, underwater, and I obviously Italy doesn't have the money to fix it. Italy is broke. No money can go to the infrastructure to any of these cities, not just Venice, but Rome also, and all the other areas. You have a lot of the wealth, but that's, I guess there was only one death, which was enough, because of a man that had died by electrocution while trying to pump water from his home. And so,
well, maybe that's what these billionaires across the globe, Melody, have to do. They have to get together and maybe coordinate an infrastructure renewal program around the world.
Yeah, and then we'll be beholden to them for the rest of our lives. We're beholden to time. I'm sorry, we're out of time, Dave. Thank you all for joining us today. We'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.